comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Again, to talk radio like nowhere else on earth, the show where you matter. We're here because you have a right to know. During the computer meltdown we had several weeks ago, many of you stepped to the rescue with both equipment and finances. That catastrophe, you cannot imagine, it threw us into an almost impenetrable mire of backlog in the various tasks that have to be done, because they have to be done each and every day, and we were down without a computer network for several days. But I've been working very, very hard to catch up. One of the things that I am running really far behind on, I haven't forgotten it, I just haven't been able to get there yet, is getting thank you emails out to each of you who contributed to that very special crisis we were having. You didn't contribute to the crisis. You contributed to the solution. But I want to say that you're not forgotten, and I'm not ignoring you or the fact that you helped. I'm trying desperately to get caught up enough to start getting those emails out. I appreciate each and every one of you who have supported with your donations. And, you know, you keep the show alive. You keep us broadcasting. And I appreciate you more than words could express. I want you to know that. One of the topics that has received a great deal of discussion across the internet is the topic of chipping humans with implants. Freedom-loving people everywhere have declared they absolutely will not receive a chip, at least not voluntarily. Religious groups have declared the human chip implant is the mark of the beast, and they have vowed they will not submit to chipping. But what if you're already chipped, and you do not even know that you're already chipped? What if you've been involuntarily chipped against your will and without your knowledge? Is such a thing possible? Well, my guests tonight, and I have two of them, my guests tonight say yes. Not only do they say that it is possible to have that done to you, they have the proof that it was done to them. For our members, you will see a chip that was removed from one of our guests. The other guest is trying to arrange to have his chip removed now. And you'll also see possibly a chip that was an implant that was removed by one of our listeners yesterday. He removed it himself. Now, for those of you who have not yet joined, I'll describe what we are seeing when I put those pictures up. But the question is it true? Is our freedom being chipped away, quite literally, without your consent, without my consent? Is it possible that it's happening to more people than we can imagine? We'll be back right after this. Been my guest previously. When he was my guest, he appeared here along with a medical doctor who had found the chip implant on an MRI. He filed a case in court against the perpetrator of this crime, and guess what? He won. David Larson also joins us this evening. He holds an elected office at the county level and was involuntarily chipped. He has had the chip removed and is attempting to get the case heard in court. So let me begin by saying, David, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Kevin.
And James, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back, Kevin. I appreciate the opportunity to spread the word a little bit more.
James, we're going to revisit your case, but we'll do that in just a moment. Since we have not yet heard about Mr. Larson's case, let's begin there. David, you had a chip implant removed from your body. How did you discover that you had a chip implant?
Well, my case is a little unique in the fact that it's pretty well documented. In my case, medical devices became infected. Medical doctors were able to remove some of the medical devices. It's important for people to understand that when the U.S. military or intelligence agencies direct these kind of intelligence activities at people, the medical devices are implanted in a quantity. So it's not just one device. It's typically many devices, and they're very small. In my case, some of the medical devices became infected, and that infection caused inflammation. And it made it easier for medical doctors to identify the locations where the infection and inflammation was and to surgically remove medical devices. Now, in my case, I knew what had happened to me. I have been directly involved in some of the R&D efforts of contract personnel since March 1997. I was able to identify the contract personnel who were involved. I was able to perform or have microscopy performed on the medical devices. I was able to trace the medical devices back to a specific contract number within the government. So my case is extremely well substantiated, where on more than one occasion medical doctors have removed medical devices. So,
okay, well, let me ask a question now before we get much deeper into this. A couple of questions. Are you telling us that you knew that you were being chipped?
Yes, that's right.
And you consented to this?
No, actually I did not. What was done to me was primarily an R&D effort. The contract personnel who engaged in this endeavor, they desired a research and development opportunity. They did what they did under a government contract, under a contractual obligation. It was funded with public health services funds, but the contract personnel worked under what is called a cross-cutting nexus, which means in addition to the humanitarian or health directive they may have had under the public health services funding, there was also a defense or intelligence directive to develop a tactical or an operational capability. And what's really important for the listeners to know is that this is nothing new for the U.S. government. This is something that's been going on for a long time, since MK Ultra back in the 50s and 60s, and since the Watergate era. And these are things that have been substantiated through Senate investigations.
Okay, we'll get into the history of all this in just a minute, but I just want to clarify. You told us that you knew you were being chipped, but you did not consent to be chipped. What did they do? Did they tackle you and hold you down, or how did this happen?
Well, to have a detailed discussion on how the biomedical product is deployed could venture into an area of class.
No, I'm talking about... No. I'm talking about you.
I can offer that it has been substantiated in the Central Intelligence Agency Inspector General report from 1963.
Okay, but that's not the question. The question is you. If you knew that you were being chipped, and they were doing it without your permission, I'm just, what did they do? Did they hold you down? Did they put you to sleep? Did they, I mean, how is it that you could know they were chipping you, not give your consent, and still wind up with a chip?
Well, again, I don't want to go into too much detail because I currently have a federal lawsuit that is in front of the Ninth Circuit right now, in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. The case is pending. There is an upcoming brief that is due this month. However, I will go as far as to say that this biomedical product may and has been surreptitiously deployed upon some individuals. I would estimate that 9 times out of 10 when they do this, they're able to get these medical devices placed into somebody without them knowing it. And on a rare occasion, somebody does know about it. So I think when somebody knows about it, that's the exception to the rule, not the norm.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Without telling us how it's deployed, how about where? Let's talk about where it's deployed. Does this happen to someone when they check into a hospital?
Typically, no. I believe that in the past, if you look at Senate investigations of the CIA's activities during a research and development effort, the way this was deployed was upon people who were recreational drug users, or while they were visiting a house of ill repute and that kind of thing, and they were able to target people in that manner.
Oh, you mean a whorehouse?
Yeah. And that was
well, some of those, some of those have a fantastic reputation.
I'm sorry, what?
I said some of those have a fantastic reputation. They're famous all over the world, some of them.
Kevin, I'm an elected official. I wouldn't know about that.
Yeah, we know that no elected officials ever would know about it. Okay, more on a serious note. I actually was thinking about the one that's on television, you know, and out in, I believe it's in Reno. They've got their own television show, so they've got a reputation all over the world. Anyway, so they're typically people who are doing things they should not be doing, and basically then have victim painted all over their back, and they get selected, and it happens to them.
Well, that was a long time ago. I think that now we live in a post-war on terror era where the use of this capability has progressed into a war on terror or operational use. And now I think the application is a little bit more different. I think that the expanded power of the executive that the Bush administration was able to assert has been perverted into a point where this capability may be being used, and I'm confident it has been used, for a partisan or a political purpose in a manner it wasn't intended to be.
Okay, so the implications of what you're saying are that this technology is being used on American citizens who are unsuspecting, have not given their consent, and that is absolutely a clear violation of citizens' constitutional rights, is it not?
Absolutely, Kevin, and I think you hit the nail on the head there. To direct those kind of intelligence activities at American citizens, especially elected officials or personnel in the other branches of government, grossly undermines the U.S. Constitution. It undermines the civil rights of American citizens. It undermines the human rights of all people. And what is very important, and what's important for your listeners to understand, is that when somebody comes out and says this has happened, it's nothing to scoff at. And it's important that we take a look at some of the history, because some of these things are very well documented and substantiated in verified sources such as the U.S. Senate investigations, sworn testimony in front of the Senate.
All right, let's talk about that.
The 1963 CIA Inspector General's report. And these are all very good sources of material.
All right, let's talk about that. What did the Inspector General of the CIA report about this technology and the practice of chipping people?
The CIA Inspector General in 1963 was permitted to conduct a very candid review of CIA activities with respect to the MK Ultra program. And the Inspector General verified that numerous U.S. citizens were used as unwitting research subjects for medical experiments. And a lot of Americans know that. That's pretty well documented. And one element of the Inspector General's report that doesn't get a lot of attention, and the question that some of your listeners might be asking is, but did this program involve implantable biomedical devices? And the answer is yes. Within the 1963 Inspector General's report, it says CIA was using devices for remote monitoring of physiological signals. And now that indicates that implantable biomedical devices were being used to remotely monitor physiological signals. The same Inspector General report goes a step farther and substantiates that the American intelligence capability to control and manipulate human behavior was a closely held secret, and that a need-to-know doctrine was being applied to the associates within the agency. So that is revealing information, and it warrants a very serious look.
Okay, now let me ask you this. Was the CIA, in doing these experiments, acting as a rogue agency, or did they have congressional authorization to do it?
That's fairly well substantiated as well. It is crystal clear that the MKUltra program was conducted for in excess of 10 years with no statutory congressional notification. When the Congress finally did learn about what was happening, it was after Watergate. And I think that many members of Congress were appalled and disgusted at the activities of the CIA. These were activities that were being funded through ostensible funding mechanisms, secretly using our tax dollars. And it is repulsive what the CIA did. And if you read the transcripts from the Senate investigations, the Senate who investigated these activities, which included Senators Ted Kennedy and Daniel Inouye in 1977, they made it clear that they wanted to take activity that was necessary. They wanted to take action as necessary to make sure this never happened again. And I think what we've seen is when George Bush and Dick Cheney got back into the White House, they started right back in with these activities again. And in a highly unlawful manner, in a highly unconstitutional manner, I am confident there have been violations of law. And I would highly urge that the Attorney General and the Obama administration seek prosecution and indictment of senior Bush administration officials.
Okay, now let's parse this just a little bit.
Sure.
When the CIA got caught with MK Ultra all over their hands, the Senate basically slapped their hands. They didn't do anything to these people. None of these people went to jail.
I'm glad you brought that up, Kevin, and the argument behind that was, at the time, it was asserted that in order to get to the bottom of what had happened, in order to get through the mire of secrecy and get to the bottom of what had happened, it was asserted that the Congress needed the cooperation of all individuals involved, and in order to obtain that cooperation, basically, waivers or passes were handed out. Nobody went to prison. There were people who were verbally reprimanded, but it has been substantiated in government documents that not a single person involved even had a reprimand end up in their record. So there was nothing written. The reprimands were all verbal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that certainly paints a picture of an agency completely out of anyone's control. Everyone is afraid to deal with them.
Fundamental disregard for the rule of law, a fundamental disregard for human rights, and a fundamental disregard for our high ideals in this nation.
All right, now let's parse it just a little bit more. It is generally the practice of these agencies, the CIA, the NSA, the DIA, the DEA, when they get caught doing something that's not right, that's illegal, and they get their hand slapped by the Senate or the Congress, generally the practice has been, because the same thing happened to the FBI too. They got their hand slapped pretty hard. And so they say, oh, we're sorry. You're right. We just made a mistake here, and we won't do that again, and we're taking steps to see that this never happens again. But our history shows us that when we hear the phrase, this will never happen again, look out. If you were catching it from the right side, it's now going to come from the left side. And what happens is they do shut their program down by passing it off to another agency.
It's a musical chairs shell game of three-card Monty where they can hide the program under different agencies. And you're absolutely right, Kevin. Our failure to prosecute and indict for the abuses, it has established a blank check where intelligence personnel have demonstrated repeatedly that they may target innocent Americans, elected officials, with these biomedical intelligence activities, and even when they're caught, it demonstrates that there is no blowback, nobody's prosecuted, and what it amounts to is a blank check, and it's a disservice to every American in this nation to keep turning a blind eye to it, because all it does is foster further abuses. There has to be a deterrent to keep this kind of thing from happening. We can't continue to pretend to oppose these kind of activities and then sweep it under a rug when it happens. Without actually prosecuting and indicting somebody, there will be no deterrent in the future, and then it's as much our fault that it happens as anybody else's, because we're the ones who are sweeping it under a rug and condoning it.
Well, actually, it's the people that we hire to represent us in Washington that do that, but we're at fault because we keep hiring the same ones and sending them back. Now, where I was headed with that is this. I guess I was headed to the break because it just started. All right, well, I'll get to that question when we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. Smith Show. My guests this evening are Jim Walbert and David Larson. And David, as we went to break, I was just about to ask a question. The question I was about to ask is this. Knowing the history of agencies getting their hands slapped, saying, oh, we're sorry, you're right, we shouldn't have done it, and we're going to take steps to make sure this never happens again. And so they do. They pass it off to another agency. Okay, and so that agency that got its hand slapped is complying with what they said. However, the new administrator of that program continues the program at the other agency. Is MK Ultra continuing under perhaps another name at another agency?
Well, yeah, I think the from a legal perspective, the deployment of this biomedical product by U.S., United States intelligence agencies or the military, it occurs under the provisions of a rendition. The rendition statute is well known to be very volatile. There is a situation recently where several CIA personnel, including former Deputy Director of CIA, Stephen Kappas, have been prosecuted and convicted in absentia in an Italian criminal court for their rendition practices. Specifically, there was an instance in which a gentleman was pulled off of the street in Italy into a vehicle. He was rendered unconscious with an anesthesia, and that was part of these rendition practices. I think those practices are have been recognized in other countries, such as Italy, to be highly unlawful. And intelligence personnel have been convicted for those practices in other countries. The actual use of the biomedical devices, the actual interaction with such biomedical devices, has occurred under both terrorist surveillance program, TSP provisions, as well as what is now known as enhanced interrogation tactics by the CIA. So that is where the expanded power of the executive that was enacted by the Bush administration becomes perverted, and it starts to allow use of these biomedical products domestically against anybody the Bush administration wanted at his sole discretion, and they asserted their ability to keep the identity of ghost detainees a secret. So Congress really did a disservice to the American people when they authorized the president to use any means available to him, including these medical devices, against anybody he wants, including people who legislate in Washington, D.C., and to keep the identity of them a secret. It's been perverted for a partisan and political abuse, and I would encourage this administration to do everything in its power to, number one, address those abuses to make sure they don't happen again.
All right, well, how do you know that it's been used for partisan political abuse? How do you know that?
Well, there's a compelling amount of evidence that indicates that biomedical devices were being deployed at Watergate. And without going into too much detail, the publicly available facts are, number one, we know the CIA was using devices for remote monitoring of physiological signals as part of MKUltra. And then regarding whether or not the Nixon administration continued to rely on that capability, we have a senior CIA intelligence veteran named Victor Marchetti, who came out and gave a media interview in the 1970s. Agent Victor Marchetti stated that the CIA's claims to have discontinued those practices was a cover story. It is very clear that there was more going on at Watergate than just a phone tap. I don't think it's possible for the President of the United States to be impeached and indicted for using only a phone tap. It's naive to think that would happen. And there's other evidence, including when the FBI made initial sweeps of the Watergate hotel, they didn't recover any room bugs or phone taps, and it wasn't until later, when it started to look suspicious, that FBI recovered a single room bug or phone tap. So there is additional evidence that I won't go into detail here, but there is some evidence that indicates the Nixon administration was using this MKUltra product at Watergate, and I think that explains a lot about what happened at Watergate with the President of the United States being impeached and indicted. And that MKUltra program was known to have been kept secret from Congress for more than 10 years.
All right, let's talk about your implant. First, how many implants have you had removed?
I have had about 15 removed.
Wow, they loaded you up.
Actually, that's a small number, Kevin. If you actually look at the research and development efforts, these medical devices are so small, they can be injected through a syringe. They are usually deployed in a high quantity. So, but yeah, in my case, I was fortunate that some of these medical devices became infected and that some of them were able to be removed. Physicians have not been able to remove all of them. There are still some medical devices that show up on MRI scans that have yet to be removed. So this is a problem for people who are affected by it, because removal of all the medical devices is medically very difficult. And it's very unfortunate when innocent Americans are affected by these activities.
Oh, okay, what effect do they have upon you?
Well, the capabilities are significant, and without getting into the detail about the government's capability, there's two things we know. Number one, and this is substantiated by the CIA's own documents, is that CIA used implantable medical devices to remotely monitor physiological signals. And I understand that that would have value in a war on terror or value from a surveillance perspective. The problem I have is, and what's been kept a secret largely, is that the American intelligence agencies do possess a capability to use these medical devices to control and manipulate human behavior, to administer pharmaceuticals or hormones or narcotics. And that opens up the door for a lot of abuses. And that's where I think we get into some deep constitutional rights issues, some human rights violations, and that kind of thing, especially if you're talking about directing those kind of intelligence activities at the other two branches of government.
All right, let's get James in here. And James, you told us your story last time. However, we have new listeners every night. And plus, some of our regular listeners may not have been with us the night that you told us your story. So let's get your story. You have a device implanted in you now, do you not?
Yes, I do. I have medical tests that are showing upwards of five devices that are implanted currently from the neck up, one in each ear, several in my neck, and then one in my right trapezia. That's the one that had shown up on a cross-sectional sagittal of my MRI.
How did this happen to you? How did you get these devices in you? Did you know it was happening? Did you give your consent?
No. My case is completely out of the realm of normalities. Well, actually, I think it would actually step into the realm of normalities, figuratively speaking. I was in the year 2004. I had gone to sleep on a Friday night, and I had awoke on a Monday morning for work to the alarm, and several people up around already that had already been awake for several hours. When I had awoke, I had a full beard at the time. On my left side of my beard, it had been completely singed down to my skin, and it was just rough like it had been shaved, but it was burnt. It was all curled and singed. And my left ear was showing serious signs of inner ear damages down to like my eustachia tube. It was bleeding profusely, really bad. It had ran down my ear and down the side of my neck when I had woke up. I cleaned it off and stuck a Q-tip in there, and of course the Q-tip was just saturated with blood. So I went to the doctor, into a minor emergency center here in Kansas, right up the road, and they had probed down inside of my ear a little bit and had made note that they had seen a shiny metallic object just beyond a laceration. And it was nothing that was, you know, self-inflicted. And of course the doctor, being a professional, asked me at the age of 33 if I had stuck something in my ear, and of course I told him no. You know, I mean, and after that he had shown, you know, some concern, you know, and he said if I had any more problems with it, to go ahead and come back to him and make sure I saw, you know, him himself, because he already had some scruples with it, and he was the first one that had documented it, and it did seem to be a very suspicious laceration, as well as a very suspicious reflective metallic type foreign body that was stuffed into my ear.
Okay, now how did all of this happen to you? I know you said you went to sleep and then you on Friday evening and you didn't wake up till Monday morning. So what happened?
Well, I had made an invention. And at first, I didn't really think that it had anything to do with it. I didn't realize that that's what it was. It was not very soon after that I started to experience some serious nervous system problems. I was unable to perform my job properly due to the fact that my nervous system was being so affected by surrounding electronics that, and the stalking on my job was so profusive that whoever was actually deploying the radiological device in my area was pummeling my nervous system pretty bad. So very shortly after that, I went to a doctor, my family physician, for a lump on the back of my neck as a concern as of being exposed to this radiation, because the guy that had said that that had told me that he was going to do it to me, he walked right up to me and told me that I would either, you know, share a larger percentage per contract with the invention, or that he would just continue to harass me and stalk me electronically and discredit me and then end up taking the whole invention from myself. So very soon after that, I had an MRI done, and then that's when I had confirmed the fact that there was most definitely a way for them to track me, and then that's when I had confirmed that, without a doubt, that there was something going on.
All right, so in your case, this this incident in which you got chipped was due to business rather than some sort of government thing.
Exactly, exactly. That's what it's looking like anyways. Both private detectives as well as an attorney and several other professionals have made the comments that, as well as my own, you know, retrospects of my own life's experiences and observations, I had had no problems in my life at all. I'm a licensed maintenance technician. I'm a commercial maintenance technician, residential maintenance technician as well. So, and I had really good job histories and everything. I had no problem until I made this invention.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the implications of this would be, and we'll get David to comment on this as well, that this technology developed by the government has leaked out into private use, and so now we have to worry about not only the government chipping us, we have to worry about business competitors having us chipped so they can harass us electronically. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's exactly where I'm going with it in a truthful manner of application of what I'm suspecting and what other several professionals for the case are suspecting as well, is that it is a copycat crime, a crime that has been extremely successful.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guests this evening, James Walbert and David Larson. And James, I think it was you who was answering. I had just said that the implications of what you're telling us would be, or the implication would be, that we have to be concerned about being secretly chipped, not only by government programs, government agencies, but also we have to be concerned about private companies that for whatever reason are private individuals who for whatever reason decide they're going to use this technology in order to harass us. And you had started to answer and then we had to go to break, so I want to give you the opportunity to answer that.
Yes, most definitely. I would, you know, like to point out the fact that I would, you know, agree with you on the fact that, without a doubt, some of the technology, if not the majority of the technology, obviously has leaked out onto general contractors in the areas. Ham operators are what I'm having stalking me and following me around as well, much like Mr. Larson's case. And the fellow that had threatened me with the technology that is conducting the crime, even currently with an implemented order of protection against the fundamentals of tracking technology and the actual coupling system, it is very relevant that he is he's a layman. He's not even a professional. He's a maintenance technician as well. I had actually gotten him a job. So he has access to it. He has access to the equipment as well as the actual tracking chips themselves, which I'm finding out more and more every day that the majority of the crime that's being committed, the actual conduct, is more than likely unable to be done unless they have an actual device to point at or a way to track you. But without that area of tethering you, basically, or coupling with your body, then they can introduce you into different fields of propagation, whether it be spectroscopy, infrared spectroscopy, whether it could be microwave, electromagnetic pulse, microwave auditory effect. There's several different styles of technology that are out there that can actually be propagated in your area once they're able to lock onto you with your tracking chip in you.
What sort of symptoms did you experience? What sort of symptoms do you experience?
Okay, currently, the symptoms of it have not changed. Nervous system disruption is the terminology is used for neural disruption, and what I mean by it is that, most people would attribute it to something like a forgotten thought, or like when I go to use, it seems that their monitoring abilities are so precise and so accurate. Like if I go to actually write something of importance down so that I can remember it later, I will either, one, lose the thought, or two, I won't be able to write. My hands will start shaking so bad that I can't hold my pen still for very long. Or if I'm typing something like a communication to like a bioethics committee in Washington, D.C., or a law enforcement officer or detectives, I can then notice a metallic taste in my mouth and the amplification of my nervous system, and then I will actually start to experience great difficulty in movement. It's not necessarily debilitating, but it definitely can cause some serious nervous system disruption when you're coupled with that device.
Okay, but you took this to court and you won your case, right?
Yes, I did. I was able to prove in a court of law that the individual, I was able to prove in a court of law the fundamentals of tracking. The microwave tracker, electromagnetic pulse, microwave auditory effect, infrared spectroscopy, neural disruption, several different styles of non-lethal weapons had been introduced to a judge here in town. The judge took a little bit of his time. He had reviewed all the documentation, met me out in the hall privately to discuss it with me, and very soon into the discussion, he had alerted myself to the fact that he was aware that of the technology, as well as would give me my day in court, because I had proven myself to him beyond the shadow of a doubt that this was actually happening. I had documentation from State Representative Jim Guest and his involvement in my case, as well as declassified documents from the Department of Defense, basically validating the implants as well as the weapons that couple with them. They actually refer to the implants and the documents as microcircuitry, which is installed through the ear into like the hippocampal areas or the hippocampus of the brain, as well as in spinal motor neural areas in the back of the brain as well, or right at the bottom of the brain stem. Those are the neural prosthesis of some kind. I don't know what kind of prosthetics they are, but I was able to substantiate the fundamentals of the tracking technology, and then they gave me my day in court, and I had two eyewitnesses. One was a former victim. The other one was a PhD orthologist, which is a bird doctor, and he has experience implanting birds of prey and tracking them nationwide on his home computer, and had actually observed a government vehicle stalking me on my job, pointing devices at my body while I was on my job. So he had made a police report. So both those witnesses were on call. I submitted all my information. And, of course, the guy, knowing that, you know, I had all the documentation, he didn't show up, which I was wanting him to show up. I didn't want to have to default.
Okay, but, well, now, before we go any further, I've got a question.
Okay.
All of this happened to you as a result of the actions of a private individual, not as a result of a government agency. And now you're telling us about this this guy who has a PhD in birds, who actually saw a government vehicle outside your place of employment pointing some kind of device at the building.
Exactly.
So what's the connection with the government here?
I don't know. Well, what it shows me is that there are rogue agents, or there are people out there that are affiliated with the government that have access to the technologies, whether they be a private investigation firm, whether they be former federal agents of some kind, or an individual contractor that has prior government affiliations. That what it would show me is that it leaked out through this individual to a layman at that level, and now they have become a coupled, you know, like partnership. So it shows me a solicitation of illegal activities at the government level to laymen and the public level, or at the personal level.
All right, let's get David's comments on that, David.
You're talking about the private use of the biomedical product. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, that, but also the use of the linkage of private individuals with government agencies. It sounds to me like what we've got here is a private individual that's a puppet for some government agency.
My case was more cut and dry. My case did involve a contractor in the private sector, and they were working under public health services funds, but that wasn't what they call an ostensible funding mechanism. So the contractor was actually acting under its contractual obligation with the federal government. So my case is a little more cut and dry. I was able to determine that some of the personnel involved with directing intelligence activities at me were subordinate to the deputy director of CIA, Stephen Kappas. And I have actually named the deputy director, Stephen Kappas, as a defendant in federal litigation.
Right. We have to step away. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you're here. I'm very sorry for whatever it is that caused you to miss the first hour. My guests this evening are Jim Walbert and David Larson. These are two gentlemen who have been involuntarily chipped with an implant, a chip implant. And in fact, with multiple chip implants. Mr. Walbert has gone to court and won his case. Mr. Larson is appealing a case in federal court, and they are seeking redress of grievance, which, you remember that thing we used to have called the Constitution? Says we have the right to have redress of grievance. But anyway, I think that Constitution is something that a lot of folks breathing the rarefied air of Washington, D.C. have completely forgotten about. And one that comes to mind is under the Bush administration, there was a, I think his title was Director of National Intelligence. He was the bald-headed general. And he stood up there in front of the press and misquoted the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, where it says that there has to be probable cause in order to get a warrant against someone. He said there has to be reasonable suspicion. A reporter called him on that. A reporter caught him and called him out on it. And the guy, the bald-headed genius, argued with him and said, no, it's reasonable suspicion. And the reporter said, well, I've got a copy of the Constitution right here. Would you like to see it? And it really ticked off the general. A general who, instead of being promoted to that position, really should have been fired for wearing stars fraudulently. And the reason I say he was wearing them fraudulently is this. He took an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and stood there in front of the press, exhibiting himself to be an enemy, domestic enemy, of the Constitution, in the pursuit of his goals for intelligence. My opinion, just my opinion. But that's how we get into this sorry mess, folks. That's how we get here. Guys, you, both of you have these cases. One of you, Mr. Walbert, you've won your case. Mr. Larson, you are appealing the case, which would lead me to believe that round one, the court did not agree with you. Tell us about that. What happened in round one of the court case?
Well, my case is a little bit more volatile than Mr. Walbert's. Mr. Walbert took his case to the local courts and won in local court. Mr. Walbert has mentioned that many states have passed legislation prohibiting the invasion of privacy that could be affected through implantable biomedical devices, chipping, tracking, that sort of thing. My case is more at a point with the administration, the Bush administration's expanded view on the war on terror. To sum this up in a nutshell, what has happened in the past is that the CIA has used implantable biomedical devices during programs such as MKUltra. It was investigated by the Congress. It was deemed to be unconstitutional. It was deemed to be repulsive and in violation of the law. And allegedly, the activities were discontinued. The problem we're seeing today is that the Bush administration was able to invoke a war on terror and pervert this war on terror into continuing these kind of activities domestically against American citizens. So my argument in the federal courts challenges some of those assertions because, in my opinion, I would agree with you. As an elected official, I took an oath to uphold the rule of law. And during the Bush administration, when they attempted to enact some of these provisions, if you remember, there were personnel at the Department of Justice who threatened to quit and walk out because what was being done does not stand the light of day. It doesn't hold up the scrutiny. It grossly and deeply undermines the constitutional rights of U.S. citizens. And I think it's, number one, it's every American's right to know what the government is doing here. Because this is not just affecting Al-Qaeda. It's not just affecting terrorists. These biomedical-related intelligence activities have been directed at our children, our neighbors, our elected officials, our coworkers. These are people domestically who have not been convicted of any crime, who have not been subjected to a trial, to due process, to any sort of meaningful opportunity to challenge any assertions made by the government. And this vast, sweeping authority that the Bush administration enacted in the name of keeping us safe from terrorists has been perverted to further a program that is much like MK Ultra. And these things have been substantiated in the past through the Senate hearings, through the Central Intelligence Agency's Inspector General. It is substantiated that it's a fact that CIA did use innocent American citizens as research subjects. And I think what we're seeing here today is much of the same thing, only instead of calling them research subjects, they're calling them detainees or terrorists.
Well, when we couple this technology, which is really, you know, that's the focus of tonight's show, is this technology. But when you realize that it's in the hands of people who are doing some other things, it becomes even more ominous. And let me give you one example. The Department of Homeland Security is headed by one Janet Napolitano, who has been on television and has said on television that the Department of Homeland Security has partnered with Walmart Security. Now that means when you walk into Walmart, the people walking around in Walmart that are dressed just like other customers, but they work for Walmart Security, also now have a connection to Department of Homeland Security. In other words, while you shop, they spy. Now, couple this technology with the fact that they give flu shots at Walmarts, not at every Walmart, but all over the place. And I'm not saying, and I want to make this clear, I am not saying nor implying that Walmart is chipping people. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that when we link all of this together, it should give us some cause for concern. And it's something that should be looked into. And I know that Walmart will not be happy with me having said what I said, nor will Janet. But Janet will just have to get over it, and so will Walmart, because she's the one that went on TV and said they were partnered. What do you think about the link-ups between private business and government spook agencies?
Well, Kevin, I would point out one thing, is that James Walbert touched on it a little earlier, but my objection would be when the intelligence agencies farm out intelligence activities or contract out intelligence activities into the private sector. One problem that we have is a lack of accountability, and the best example of that would be Blackwater. We saw some horrible abuses in the private sector. There was a lack of accountability, and that could be grossly exploited. When you're talking about a telecommunications intelligence activity, such as interacting with implanted biomedical devices, that could happen from anywhere. So geographic locale becomes very convoluted. It would be possible for a contractor in the UK to be interacting with medical devices implanted in a person, an elected official, an American citizen, and that would constitute one party inside the United States of America and one party outside the United States of America. They could describe the implantable medical devices as an electronic listening device, and now it would meet the criteria to fall under the provisions of the NSA's Terrorist Surveillance Program, the TSP. And, of course, we know that the TSP is not subject to warrants. It's warrantless wiretap, no oversight from the courts, no due process, none of that. So when you talk about deploying the medical devices under the provisions of a rendition, that would be one agency. You're talking about the CIA now. And now you're talking about interacting with the medical devices. That's a different animal. That's a separate entity, interacting with the medical devices. That is a different activity than deploying the medical devices. So it can get very convoluted. Now, with respect to Walmart, I don't have a problem, and I don't mean to belittle the Constitution. That's the last thing I'm here to do, because I have a deep respect for the Constitution. I understand that document's importance. However, I don't think Americans have as much to fear with being spied on when they're at Walmart. My bigger fear, and I think a much greater problem, is the use of these biomedical devices by the executive branch to spy on a member of Congress while they're in closed session, while they're in their bedroom. That presents severe problems to our democracy, to our high ideals, to our national security. And we have seen in the past that administrations with a Dick Cheney in the administration, such as the Nixon administration, was willing to go down that road. They targeted Congress or Democrats with intelligence activities at Watergate. They were caught. To the Congress's credit, they did a very good job in taking the Nixon administration to task. The President of the United States was impeached and indicted. The Watergate burglars were sent to prison. That was the appropriate thing to do to deter future abuses. Now, the problem is when Dick Cheney got back into the White House, we're seeing some of those activities again. And these intelligence activities are being directed at elected officials, Kevin. And that's when there's a problem.
Well, you're an elected official, and it was directed at you. James Walbert is not an elected official, and it was directed at him. And, you know, my point with that is nobody's safe.
That's exactly right, Kevin. The use of this biomedical product is indiscriminate. It's indifferent to race, creed, color, geographical location, or citizenship status. They're doing it to everybody, Kevin. Nobody's off the table.
Well, and just to tack on some information to something you were talking about, how you have the intelligence operations, and then you have private contractors that they hand off some of that, some of the tasking to. Listen, Congress themselves have commented, congressmen themselves have commented that at a minimum, 30% of our intelligence operation around the world is being done by private contractors. A great many, and I would, it's my opinion that it's probably most, of the on-the-ground intelligence operatives are private contractors. I've met a number of them. I've interacted with a number of them. I know that they are private contractors. Yes, the agency has their own guys and gals out there, but they also have a great many that are private contractors. And you have pointed out a very important issue, and that is when we look at, and look, everyone in the world knows the name Blackwater. And when we look at what was done by some of the Blackwater people, and I'm sure there was a great deal more done that we don't know, but when we look at what was done, the part we do know, and just think about folks like that directing venom towards the American people themselves. Now, there are people that say, look, there's no way I would ever do anything to hurt Americans. I wouldn't do anything to hurt the American people. What I do is for America. Can't count on that. You can't count on that. You know, when that little switch flips in someone's head and their brain is broken to the point that they would do some of the torturous things that they've done to other people around the world, do you think they could just repair their soul and just repair their brain once they cross back into America? I don't know. It's a big question.
This is Dave Larson. There is some history there, and it is well known from many years back, an experiment was conducted called the Milgram experiment. And what the Milgram experiment showed us was that 60% of Americans would electrocute their fellow Americans to death as long as somebody else was authorizing it. The number went up to 90% if there was an agent provocateur in that mix, meaning somebody urging the person on, telling them that it was okay, that other people did it too. And That was a scary experiment, because what it did was it took volunteers in the experiment, it sat them down at a console. They were told to push these buttons of increasing electrical current, and from an undisclosed location, a scream would emanate, and it would replicate the the subject of the experiment to believe that the buttons were causing electrical current to be put into another volunteer or experimental target. And what is scary about that is it showed us that 60% of Americans would electrocute their fellow Americans to death as long as somebody else was authorizing it, and that number could be as high as 90% if somebody was encouraging them to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, and that is precisely why I don't believe in the rule of law. I believe in the rule of the Constitution. It rules law, or it's supposed to. And let me make the distinction. You can pass a law that everyone whose name ends with a letter R has to drink a quart of Kool-Aid every day. That's a silly law and a silly example. But what if you make a law that everyone whose name ends in R has to report to a concentration camp? Now, again, people would say, well, that's nuts. Folks, that kind of stuff's been done on this planet several times in our history. And just because it's a law doesn't mean it's right. And the Constitution was designed to protect us from those kind of laws. So just because someone says, okay, well, these agents are not breaking the law, well, that's probably true. They're probably not breaking the law because the laws have been changed and written to permit them to do this. But the Constitution says they can't, says the government can't. And so here's the government as an outlaw. The government breaking the Constitution makes the government an outlaw. And
well, Kevin, it's commonly known that the CIA has its own thesaurus when it comes to defining their activities. It's commonly known that to conduct medical experiments on a prisoner of war would be unlawful. The U.S. government has people who have been imprisoned as part of the war, but they don't call them prisoners of war. They call them detainees. So I think the argument there is that we're not subjecting prisoners of war to medical experiments. These are detainees, so now it's lawful.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's two elements there. Number one, they describe the target of the intelligence activities as something creative, and then they also describe their intelligence activities themselves as something creative. So instead of medical experiments or torture, we'll put that under the umbrella of enhanced interrogation tactics.
Oh, yeah, you just redefine it, and then it's okay.
Yeah, and instead of calling them prisoners of war, we'll call them a detainee. So now they're not breaking the law. So the activity hasn't changed. They're still engaged in the same unlawful activity. What has changed is the way they're describing the activity. And I absolutely agree with you that under the Bush administration, the rule of law has become perverted. The war on terror has been exploited. And I think there are some very unhealthy applications of this expanded war on terror that are occurring domestically. And we're talking about domestic, innocent American citizens.
Well, to be fair, though, it's not just the Bush administration. I worked under the Bush administration as an international police officer. I also worked under the Clinton administration. When Bill Clinton tried to get, he tried to do a national gun grab, and Congress wouldn't go for it. He said, if the Congress won't, he said this, if the Congress won't do it, I'll do it by executive order. So he was saying, if I can't get what I want through lawful means, I'll just be a dictator here, and I'll just do it by executive order. Well, someone pointed out to him that executive orders have absolutely no force of law outside of federal government employees. And it does have force of law for federal government employees, but outside of that, it has no force whatsoever. And so that's the only thing that shut him down on that. So it's not just the Bush administration. This idea that, you know, I'm the president and by God, I'll do what I want to do, that goes back a long way. Now, you mentioned Nixon. Nixon actually said in his interview with, I believe it was David Frost, that if the president does it, it's not a lie. If the president says it, it's not a lie. It's not against the law. So this idea that presidents have, that somehow they're God, that goes way back. And they've been expanding their executive power for several administrations now. I want to go back to this. I want to go back to this implant that was taken out of you. Now, for those who are watching our TV station, they're seeing a picture of an implant that was removed from you. On the left side, what we've got just looks like some kind of gristle tissue. On the right side, we have what looks like, blueprints or drawing for some kind of device. Now, this implant that was taken out of you, I assume, grew this tissue around it or accumulated this tissue around it. And the diagram that we see on the right side, is that what was actually in that tissue?
Kevin, if you're talking about my case, David Larson's case,
yes.
I don't have access to what the viewers are seeing, so I can't comment on what they're seeing. If anybody wants to see the medical devices that were surgically recovered from my person and the photos which have been introduced as evidence in my federal lawsuit, they can view the entire civil complaint, which is uploaded to my website, at electlarson.com. That's electlarson, L-A-R-S-O-N.com. So, and outside of that, I can't comment on what's on the screen, but what
well, it's from your website.
Yep.
When it's a picture of an implant.
Were recovered, they did match the intellectual property and patent filings that were filed by the contractor who placed the medical devices.
Okay. Now, one of the things that is pretty interesting, because this person that I'm about to tell you about had no idea what we were going to be talking about tonight. I had a listener that called me yesterday. While he was talking with me, he was telling me that he had something in his hand that had been bothering him for a long time, and he began to try and dig this thing out of his hand. And it took for took a while, but while, in fact, it had over several days he had been trying to get it out of his hand. And while he was talking to me, he finally got it out of his hand, and he sent me a picture of it. And it looks very similar to what you had taken out of you. It's got a little hook at the end of it, the shape of it. In fact, it's sort of shaped like a tadpole with the tail curled. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guests this evening, James Walbert and David Larson. James, let me get you back in here for just a moment. Having been through all of this, and you went through the court case, you won your court case, is the electronic harassment continuing? I think you told me that it is. Isn't that correct?
Yes, actually, if anything, the harassment intensified. It seems that the more my voice is heard, or the bigger my case becomes, because I have another case in federal court right now that is looking really, really well. We just had a change of assignment of judges, which rules in my favor. So there's been some really good, strong, positive steps with this other lawsuit that I'm attending. And it seems that the more shows I do, the more exposure that I'm getting, the more truth I'm spreading, the harassment intensifies more and more and more, which would definitely show me that the method is to try to snuff me out. I mean, they've...
Okay, but now in your first case, in your first court case, you won that. And yes, did not the judge order them to cease and desist their electronic harassment of you?
That is correct. Yes, yes, they were ordered to desist from their methods of harassment and no electronic means of harassment or communication or tracking were to ever be involved again as far as this guy's involvement with my case or my private life. Where the second court case comes from, that eruption is due to local police's negligence. When I had gone to report the crime and the violation against the protection order, they had basically come out. They had called me crazy to my face, even though I was showing them documentation from state representatives, very powerful, credible private investigators. And it's not just it's one private investigator, it's several private investigators, as well as medical professionals and several clinical psychologists that have also made psychological assessments of myself, pointing out the fact that I'm of sound mind while I'm making these statements to these police officers, and they still refuse to do anything about it. I put them on a 30-day notice, which is required in Kansas. I filed a claim with the Kansas courts, the tort courts, and I went from there. I filed my lawsuit, and it's been active in the courts for about 8 months now. It has not been dismissed. We've had to switch judges due to personal reasons. Now the judge that we have now has ruled in the favor of pro se plaintiffs filing negligent cases against the Wichita Police Department in the past. And it's not just one, it's several. So not to necessarily say that this guy is, you know, in my pocket or on my side or anything, but it definitely was a blessing on my behalf.
So you went to the police and tried to get them to investigate the violation of the court's order, and they refused to investigate it?
Yes, they absolutely refused to investigate it. Sometimes when I would call, I'd see the stalkers around, because there's more than one of them, and this guy is always related to him. They actually refused to even come out. Then one of them came out to my home, started poking fun at me, making fun of my protection order, and was doubting my communications with local ATF federal agents as well as Secret Service agents, the validity of what I was saying to him. He was basically chalking it up as some delusional fantasy of mine that I had concocted in my head. Mm-hmm. And then I got my court order out, and I said, well, it seems to be that fantasy is a reality. And I gave him my court order, and he called it in and said that the sheriff said that he never got those papers. Then the guy's supervisor showed up out of nowhere and started reprimanding him. He got very congenial at the moment. He started, you know, groveling right in front of everybody. So it was kind of a touche moment, I guess you'd say. But that's what this lawsuit has been filed for right now, is discriminatory acts which led to gross negligence of sworn duty, which resulted in further intellectual property damages, physical damages, emotional damages, mental anguish and distress. My last job that I lost, I was being stalked on the job, and the state of Kansas unemployment office noted it as a loss of employment due to stalking and harassment on the job site. So that also works in my benefit as well. So that's like several state documents of issue that I have proving that I definitely were being harassed at the workplace as well as stalked off the job. So,
well, it's very disturbing when I hear about police officers or deputy sheriffs or law enforcement officers who take that sort of an approach. Very disturbing to me because, well, first of all, I've been a cop, and but it points out something that I've said many times, and that is we have entered a time when law enforcement officers don't understand they have absolutely no power except what is borrowed from us. We grant them that power to do their job, and we own them. And, you know, they when they don't seem to understand that the public owns them and they don't exist apart from that, that's what you call a police state. So maybe the judge is of similar sentiment, and I certainly would hope so. David, did you at any point report your situation to the police?
Yes, I did. And if I could comment on James Walbert's situation for just a moment, is like I said earlier, I properly identified the contract personnel who were involved in directing intelligence activities at me. I know these individuals pretty well. I have sat on a bar stool next to one of the principal investigators on the contract. I have had the opportunity to take the principal investigator and cross-examine him as a pro se litigant. And I can tell you right now that with respect to James Walbert's situation in obtaining a judgment in a local court, when it comes to these intelligence personnel and the contract personnel, they're going to scoff at that. They're not going to think that applies to them. They're going to exhibit a fundamental disregard for the rule of law, and I can tell you right now, they're going to laugh at that local court and assert that that local court, that state court, has no jurisdiction over their activities. They're going to puff up their chest and beat their chest and say they're fighting a war on terror and that it's by any means necessary that they keep us safe from terrorists. So that is the problem here. And until Mr. Walbert is able to obtain a judgment in a federal court against the government, they're not going to lay off anybody. They're going to continue to do this to whoever they want with pretty much impunity. And I think that's
well, you know, it's only going to take one judge's boot hard in the throat of a couple of federal agents. It's not going to take much more than that to get them to roll this back.
That would be great, and I hope to see that happen. And in fact, I would encourage the judicial branch to take them to task on this because there are abuses. There have been perversions of justice. There have been instances in which this war on terror has been exploited to grossly violate the constitutional and civil rights of Americans. And what it comes down to is the CIA can still fight the war on terror. They don't need to direct these kind of intelligence activities at innocent Americans or elected officials. They need to focus their efforts on going after real terrorists. They need to leave the elected officials alone. They need to leave the children alone. They need to leave the innocent Americans alone, because when they abuse their authority, they're jeopardizing the entire program.
Well, yes, they are. And, you know, what it does, this sort of activity against law-abiding American citizens, what it does is it turns those people eventually down the road somewhere, sometime, it turns those people into insurgents who have just had enough. They go for broke, and now you got real problems. And,
well, that's exactly right. When it's been my experience, and James Walbert touched on this a little bit about the problems he's had with local law enforcement. I can tell you right now that in my situation, federal government personnel have interacted with local law enforcement. They have exerted some national security or war on terror privileges to interact with the local law enforcement, to manipulate the way they've handled the situation to some extent. And that's been done to try to limit the extent to which their program activities have been compromised.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. Are you a terrorist?
Personnel who have worked under government due to some of the volumes of documents that have been released to me under Freedom of Information and that thing, I would make the bold claim that I have substantive knowledge of their activities. And I think that there was a great fear of their program being compromised.
All right. I've got a question.
Yeah.
Are you a terrorist?
No, sir. I have never been convicted of a drug charge or a felony in my entire life. I've never held a passport book. I've never traveled overseas to foreign countries. And my issue is that I discovered criminal misconduct by Bush administration officials. I incurred retaliation and reprisal as a result. That's the lowdown.
James, are you a terrorist?
No. I would have to revisit the exact same thing that Mr. Larson had touched base on. I've never had any run-ins with the law. I've never had any felonies. I've never had any charges put against me for any reasons at all. I've never had a reason for anybody to peek in my window or to chip me and track me. I mean, logically, I can't think of one reason to violate a human being's person in such an application. It seems rather bizarre to me, but no, I've never even considered it.
Hey, Kevin, this is Dave Larson. I can even go one farther. I actually received votes for President of the United States in the 2008 presidential primary election proceedings as an American independent write-in candidate. These intelligence activities have actually been directed at me while I was confirmed or after I was confirmed by the Secretary of State. And I got votes for president from several different counties and demographic regions. Small campaign, but nevertheless, I was a bona fide candidate. I passed a federal background check. I work with a partner with the federal government in our U.S. National Park Service. And I find it extremely repulsive that the CIA and the intelligence community would direct these kind of intelligence activities at candidates for office, at innocent Americans, and sitting elected officials. It deeply undermines our national security. I am confident that these intelligence activities have been directed at people who legislate in Washington. I have made a formal allegation to the Attorney General that that has happened, and I hope that they're properly investigating and that they get to the bottom of this. And I would strongly urge the Obama administration to do everything necessary to make sure this program isn't abused. Because when they abuse it this egregiously, they're jeopardizing the future administration's ability to use the program. They're placing the whole program in jeopardy. And it's imperative that the intelligence agencies use this capability in a responsible manner.
All right, we have to step away for break, and when we come back, we will be on final approach here, folks. We only have a few minutes left. I think you can tell this is one amazing story. One elected official, one everyday citizen, chipped without their consent. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with two gentlemen this evening who had discovered sometime in the past that they had been implanted, have been chipped involuntarily without their permission. These devices, as David Larson has so eloquently stated, are not denied by the CIA, and they're well documented in several reports and investigations at the federal level. But, David, is it only the CIA that's using these things?
That's a good question, Kevin, and the answer is no. There is, as you touched on earlier, there has been an ability to disperse these intelligence activities amongst several agencies. I'm sure at some level that the interaction with implanted medical devices has occurred under the provisions of the terrorist surveillance program. The federal government could assert that these medical devices are no different than any other electronic listening device and interact with them under the provisions of a TSP with no warrants, warrantless surveillance. One party could be inside the United States of America. There could be a contractor outside the United States of America who is interacting with the medical devices. So there is room for exploitation. We touched earlier on farming these intelligence activities out to the private sector. That is very problematic because now you get into a lack of accountability. We saw that with contractors such as Blackwater. So early on, when we talk about the CIA and the MKUltra program, the CIA Inspector General did substantiate that CIA was using devices for remote monitoring of physiological signals during MKUltra. The equipment lists from MKUltra substantiate that they were using national brand shortwave radios, that they were using EEGs and that kind of equipment as part of MKUltra. And I think that the scalding and the very candid investigation conducted by the Senate limited the CIA's ability to do that in the future. I mean, their lid was blown off, and they were sitting there with their pants around their ankles, engaged in some very subversive and unlawful behavior. So I think after that happened, there was an effort to try to hide these activities, and that includes dispersing the activities amongst other intelligence or military agencies.
The CIA, we all have been told, is not supposed to be doing anything inside the United States.
And that's a common misconception, Kevin, because that did, in fact, occur at one time. The CIA was prohibited from conducting domestic operations, but that all changed after 9/11 when George Bush asserted that the war on terror also applied to the citizens of the United States of America and that there was a global war on terror. Now, it's very hard for the administration to declare war on its own citizens. What it was able to do was declare war in Iraq and Afghanistan and then assert that that war encompassed the whole globe. So there are no geographic limits on the war on terror. The CIA has asserted that, and the Bush administration asserted that it could do this to anybody they want. And I think the provision that's been exploited here are ghost sites and ghost detainees. The Bush administration asserted that it could keep the identities of detained individuals a secret. They asserted that a detainee is not just a person who is in the physical custody of the government, but one who is otherwise under the effective control of the government. And that leaves room for interpretation as to what does that mean? What does under the effective control mean? If they're not in the physical custody of the government, then what are they exactly? And it's those gray areas that the Bush administration has notoriously exploited, and I think Congress, they really did do a disservice to America when they allowed the Bush administration to get away with what they got away with. But more importantly, there have been prosecutable violations of law. I have brought prosecutable violations of law to the attention of the Attorney General. And I expect, my hope and expectation is that this administration can find a way to prosecute, because without prosecution, we can't hope to deter these abuses in the future, and that's what it comes down to, sir.
What do you think about that, James?
Yeah, most definitely I would have to agree. Is the misconduct of all of it to seek them out and to actually be able to be successful against them and bringing them accountable for their actions. That's what my main goal is with the activism work that I'm doing now, is pointing out the 21 states that now have taken emergency measures to outlaw forced chipping, as well as coining a term called human movement. Myself and several professionals that are involved with the case feel that how big is this problem really? You know, where are they exactly tracking you, and why are they, what type of movement are they actually coining the term or adhering the term human movement to? Is it in your home? Is it in your, is it in the privacy of your bedroom? Could it be like what Mr. Larson had also touched base on? Could it be a congressional member while he's in a closed session, while he is, you know, making decisions about national security, and there is an individual that is able to actually intercept these frequencies and listen in and to cause an interference of some kind? Who do we hold accountable for these things when they are joining in from government to private sector, to private individual layman on the street? The fellow that's committing the crime against myself, he has no contacts at the government level, but obviously somebody he knows has contacts. And the people that I've seen stalking me are typical ham operators, which in my case is much like Dave Larson's case. The fact that the biomedical devices have been implanted in me, and that he too had found that there were ham operators that were involved with these illegal actions. That's showing me a government, private individual, and private sector involvement. Everybody's in cahoots to here. So the accountability is a very, very touchy issue on how to, who do we hold accountable? I mean, because governments will seek a refuge under a facade of immunity. And now with these laws coming out, further examination of the laws, the implication of the law, what it's implying is that every single law, all 21 states, have a grandfather clause in them. So what that's showing me, which means that if you were implanted in the year 1980 and you went in the year 2011 and had it removed, and they traced it back with like microscopy or spectroscopy testings, infrared testings, as well as lot numbers and manufacturer's dates, then without a doubt they can trace this implant's manufacturer all the way back to 1980. So why is it that all 21 states that have all 21 laws, 13 of them that were passed, actually 17 of them were passed under emergency measures, which are inside of 13 months. That's been introduced, it's been heard, it's hit the floor, it's went from bill to law. So how long, what it's showing me is that there is somebody at the legislative level that is more than aware that this has been going on for a very long time, and now the cup is runneth over. And now there are people that are stepping out, like myself, and like elected official David Larson, that actually have true, substantiated, tangible evidence that is irrefutable. And now they're not actually trying to call me crazy. They're now trying to make it look as if there might be an application of cause for this to have happened.
I wish we had more time, but we don't. We are out of time. It's been absolutely fascinating, gentlemen. I want to thank you for stepping up and telling your story. Folks, as I said, one elected official, one everyday citizen, involuntarily implanted with these chips, electronically harassed. If it can happen to them, it can happen to anybody. There are those who push for freedom and those who push for safety at all costs, including the cost of freedom. I like freedom. I'll keep myself safe. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.